Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. Glad to be with you this morning. This is my first show since I got back from Amelia Island, Florida, and the Concorde Elegance, real fancy name for a very amazing car show. But also, we went to a number of auctions, the RM auction, the Gooding auction, and the Bonhams auction. So three different auctions, on each on separate days. And they had a very wide variety of cars for sale. The Bonhams auction, I think they broke their personal or their record for their company there at Amelia Island of $44 million in sales. The Gooding auction is the one that I actually ended up sitting in the bidding seats. I told you, my plan was not to buy any cars. I failed. I ended up buying two cars. But they ended up selling $66 million, $13 million of which went to one car, a 1937 Talbot Lago, which Talbot Lago. I would say if I was pronounce it like I learned at Greenville High School, it'd be Talbot Lago. But in French, it's probably Talbot Lago or something like that. But that car brought, it was estimated that it would bring in excess of $10 million, and it did. It brought $13 million. Just think, there's somebody sitting out in that crowd that had $13 million worth of play money to play with. They were obviously in a different league than the guys that were sitting in my section, including me. I did buy a nice 1990 Porsche 964. Well, it's a 911, but it's a 964 is the internal number. They built those from, I think, 1989 until 1992, I believe. And really popular air-cooled body style, but my brother and I went together on it. And then also bought a 1988 Toyota Land Cruiser that had been modified. They put an LS V8 in it, Chevrolet. Fuel-injected V8 engine with 350 horsepower, as opposed to the inline six-cylinder that came in at new. Now, you may think that that would destroy the value of the thing, but au contraire, I guess that's French too, it actually increased the value of it dramatically, and at least that's what I'm hoping, because I didn't buy either one of these cars to keep. I bought these to fix up a little bit, do a few things too, and then find them a new happy home. So that's the plan anyway. One conclusion that I can take from the auction and from what I saw just in general was that the collector car market is strong and shows no signs of abating in any way. Values continue to go up in spite of what's going on in the world. And that's kind of frightening. It's almost like there is a denial of world events, or that there are so many different kinds of world events that if you let them all bother you, that it would be you would have a hard time functioning. Yes, the Ukraine thing bothers the heck out of me, but it's just, again, it's one of those things that I've got to watch out for my business and what's going on, and pray hard for those people and what they're going through. But the world seems to be shrugging it off in certain ways. I tell you one thing I can't shrug off, though, is $4.50 for a gallon of gas. I paid that coming back. That was for regular unleaded, and shocking. I did have a problem with my F-150 on the way back. Now, if you're driving down a road and you've got I was pulling the trailer. I took my Mustang down there to drive around while I was down there, and that was fun. But you're going down a road and all of a sudden a light flashes up on your dash and it looks like an engine. Well, that's the check engine light. And since I have the Ford Pass app, which still sounds weird for me to say that, it's an app on my phone called the Ford Pass. And so I went in there, pulled over on the side of the road and looked at it, and it tells me what the problem was. And it was some type, I can't remember exactly what it's called, some type of an EVAP system on the emission controls. So I started running low on gas, so I pulled in this gas station, and I start putting gas in my truck. And it would let me put about like 3/10 of a gallon in, then it would shut off. And then I would have to do it again. Like it was full, but and was shutting it off because it couldn't take any more gas. It took me 25 minutes to get enough fuel in there to hit $100. And that was the maximum on my credit card, I guess, you know, where they tap out at 100. They haven't faced that in a long time since gas prices got low, but now we're there again. And so the pump shuts off and you have to, you know, do the whole thing again to add more gas to your vehicle. But in this case, it took me so long to get that much gas in it, I just said the heck with it and took off down the road. So there is a defective vent tube, a flap or something that's not opening up in my gas tank. And it's to control, I guess, fumes coming out of the tank and messing with the environment. And so we had to order a new one. I did not make a call. I started to make a call to my service manager. But I figured since the thing was running fine and there didn't seem to be any other issues, fuel economy was, you know, about where I expected it to be. So I figured it was a problem that would not be a problem on my way home. But I can understand how you would think so. The recommendation in the information in my app said that I should find my nearest Ford dealer. But I was driving it. I am the nearest Ford dealer. I just happened to be 350 miles from my dealership, so that was a little concerning. But anyway, I made it back, and now I've got to unload. Of course, I unloaded the Mustang, and now I've got to head back there. Not me, but I'm sending somebody else and another with another truck and another trailer to pick up the two cars that I purchased. So I did the math. It was going to cost me about $650 to get both vehicles back if I hired two guys and bought all the gas and so forth. Of course, the cars are insured. I got a quote from a company called Montway. They were going to charge me $1,800 to bring the cars back. And then just for kicks and giggles, I got one from Inner City, which is another big-time carrier for classic cars. They were going to charge $2,400. So I decided to just roll the dice and send my fellers to go down there and pick up the cars. So the Porsche that I bought is, it's been modified slightly. It was a part of a collection they were selling. It had, I think they had 25 Porsches that they were, Porsches and BMWs and a few other oddballs that this gentleman had passed away and his estate was liquidating. So this Porsche was in that collection. It's slightly modified. It's been lowered just a little bit, which is not a big deal. That's something that people who like Porsches, sometimes they like to make them look a little bit lower to the ground. So that's really all the modifications that's been done to it. However, this 88 Toyota FJ62 has a 5,300 cc, which would be 5.3 liters, or, I don't know how many cubic inches that would be, but 5,300, I could do the math. It's got fuel injection, 350 horsepower, four-speed automatic. Of course, that's a General Motors automatic. But it has been restored by this company in California called TLC. Now, that TLC company did nothing but Land Cruisers. That's what that stands for, Toyota Land Cruisers. And they did some very high-end restorations, and they happened to do this vehicle. So it's done right. But then he closed the company. He just morphed it into another company called Icon. And if you look up Icon Broncos or Icon Land Cruisers, you will see the website of this guy who really, they bring more money than just about any other Bronco or Land Cruiser. They are the ultimate. A lot of movie stars and people like that and people with big bucks buy these vehicles. When I say big bucks, I'm talking anywhere from $150,000 to $300,000 is what they pay for these Broncos and Land Cruisers. And so I knew that this had a good reputable restorer. I could tell by just looking at it, but I didn't realize it was going to be them. So that's why I feel confident that I can make some money on this. I was telling my brother, I just don't buy anything unless I have an exit strategy. And really, for the most part, my exit strategies have worked out pretty good, but occasionally they don't. And I'm a little bit concerned about the Porsche. I'm not concerned about the Land Cruiser. But before you buy anything, you know, you got to really think about how am I really going to use this? Am I really going to start going to car shows, or is it just going to sit in my garage? And, you know, it's enjoyable for a while, and then I get tired of it. So that's something you really need to figure out. It's kind of like buying a camper. I bought my camper and thought that I would be using it probably 5 or 6 times a year. But then there's a lot of work that goes into setting up a camper. If you've never done it, then you really don't appreciate it. You think that you just pull it into the spot, unhook it, and just go. But there's a lot of work you got to do. Getting it level and hooking up the sewer and the electricity and getting everything all folded out and, you know, getting the meals and the groceries. I mean, it's a job just getting ready to go, let alone being there. Makes staying in a hotel awfully appealing. But anyway, that's just what we do. We always find some way to complicate our own lives, right? But I'm very happy with my trip. It was a great time with my brother and the other guys that go with us. They're all car people. There were 5 of us. We ate good and saw a bunch of stuff that was thrilling. Probably one of my favorite trips down there ever. So thanks for putting up with me while I explain it to you. So I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. You know, one of the biggest obstacles to EV acceptance, electric vehicle acceptance, is charging stations, right? Well, just recently in an article in the Winston-Salem Journal, I guess they still actually have a newspaper there, that electric vehicles are coming to North Carolina. About 16,000 already are on the state's roads. That doesn't sound like many. Thousands more will soon join them. 3 years ago, Governor Roy Cooper issued an executive order calling for 80,000 zero-emission vehicles in the state by 2025. So they're kind of a liberal state. They got the research triangle over there and a lot of scientists and doctors and stuff. So the U.S. House of Representatives recently greenlit legislation that would provide about $100 million to North Carolina for EV charging stations. So if you're driving through North Carolina in a couple years, I guess you should be able to get across the state and be able to find a DC charger. You know, that's one of the fast chargers that can charge the vehicle in about 40 minutes. Still sounds kind of like a long wait. I like filling up with gas in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, however long it takes, or 25 minutes like it did me yesterday since I had that car problem. You know, this invasion of Ukraine could trigger a second microchip crisis. I was reading that vehicles and auto parts will be endangered by this invasion because, not because they make chips there, but because Ukraine is the source for about 70% of the world's output of neon. Now, neon is a critical gas that runs lasers, and they are needed to manufacture semiconductor chips. So just because they don't make any chips there doesn't mean that that will not impact the manufacture of chips. That's all we needed. You know, as a result of that, February sales slowed except for SUVs. SUVs did pretty good. The industry-wide inventory crunch caused by the semiconductor chip shortage took its toll. February sales hovered just above 1 million cars and light trucks, which represented a drop of 12.4% versus the same time last year. They had one of the new Hummers, and that's an all-electric vehicle, on the field at Amelia Island. They had a display there. A lot of different manufacturers display their goods there at this car show because it's just, you know, it's probably 15,000 people milling around looking at all these cars. So Porsche, Mercedes, Lexus, BMW, and I think that was it. And they were, again, they had the General Motors display. All it had in it was one vehicle, the GMC Hummer. Yeah, it's going to be a GMC product, all electric. Looks really cool. I mean, I know that there's going to be a lot of people that want to get their hands on one of those, but they are 100,000 plus. Which, if things keep going the way they are now, that's going to be the average price of a car. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were talking about the increasing financing terms. So that's the only way they're going to be able to keep vehicles affordable, is low rates and longer terms. So you might be financing your next Hummer for 240 months. So who wants to do that? Not me. There's about 13,000 vehicles were removed from production plans because of the chip shortage last month. So that's not as bad as it was. So far, a total of 656,200 vehicles have been cut in the 2022 model year from the worldwide production. That sounds like a big number. I tell you, every dealer that I saw on this trip to Amelia Island, I drove by a lot of car dealerships. They were all empty. Their lots, these massive lots. And so Ford has come up with a new business plan. I don't know if you've heard anything about it, but they're going to have two basic businesses. And how they're going to structure that, I don't know. I mean, you know, at one time you had Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln. And now you just have Ford and Lincoln. Well, now they're taking Ford and splitting it into Ford Blue and Ford E, which is electric. And, of course, dealers are very curious as to how they're going to, how that's going to affect them. You know, due to state franchise laws and federal franchising laws, they can't just say, well, you're only going to be able to sell the Ford Blue vehicles, which are going to be vehicles with internal combustion engines. Then the Ford E is going to be the whole electric division of Ford. So what they've sent down the line, you know, through the grapevine, is that if you're a Ford dealer, you're probably going to have to invest in separate divisions in your showroom and basically a different buying experience altogether. What they're trying to do on the Ford E side is to copy Tesla. And, you know, even Tesla has broken their original model. I mean, it was just made to order. And now they build cars that are not sold just to keep the factories humming. So we'll see if this works. But Ford wants everybody, if you want an electric vehicle from Ford, you're going to have to order it. And they're talking about shrinking the time that it takes to build a vehicle from the time they order a vehicle to the time it comes in. How long is a comfortable time for you? I mean, people have gotten so used to buying a car and driving off in it. I mean, that's been the model. You know, we had so much inventory and the other dealers around us had so much inventory that if somebody came in wanting a black F-150 and we didn't have one, we just get on the locator, find one, go to Knoxville, pick it up, bring it back. You know, you can have that. If you come in the morning, you might be able to get it this afternoon or, you know, within 24 to 48 hours, you could have your vehicle. And that was the model. We did a lot of dealer trades. Now there's none of that going on. Well, I say none. I mean, the other day we got a Nissan Rogue for somebody, but we traded another Nissan Rogue for it, or they wouldn't have given it to us. We wouldn't have been able to do the swap. So dealers will work together when given the opportunity. But that's going to change because we're going to have this little boutique now, I guess, where you come in and spec out your electric Ford, whether it be a truck or an SUV or I don't even know if they're going to make cars anymore, passenger cars. But you'll spec it out, and hopefully in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you'll have your vehicle. I'll believe it when I see it. Oh, yeah, one more thing. I did want to talk a little bit about used car values. I still don't think, unless this Ukraine thing does anything to really stifle the market, which it could with gas prices where they are. It could really switch people's buying habits, but it's not showing any signs of doing that. Do you think that people have gotten used to the fact that gas prices are going to go up and down and up and down again? I do. And I think a lot of people have factored that in. But it does put a world of hurt on somebody that's living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, and they have very limited funds to be able to, you know, double their gasoline purchase. I mean, that may mean that they don't, you know, aren't able to eat, buy the kind of food that they're used to and stuff like that. So I think that is a tax on the poor more so than it is for people who are middle class and higher. But it's a hardship, and we got to figure that out. And electric vehicles that are priced, you know, at 50% more than their gasoline counterparts, that's no answer either, because that just means that folks have to either extend the terms or, you know, pay higher payments on cars. Low gasoline prices to me are the answer, and so many people disagree with that because they want us to get off of fossil fuels. It's just not realistic. I just do not see that happening in the near term. Maybe long term. I mean, if they perfect this electric vehicles and people can, you know, fill up in 5 minutes with electrons, and maybe that'll work. Well, we'll take our last break, and I'll be back in just 1 minute. Well, folks, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru. I'll try to do my best to keep you informed about market trends. Used car values are, I think they're going to be stable and maybe continue to go up over the next 18 months. I do not see any changes in the chip shortage. And quite frankly, I think the manufacturers like where they are. I think they're making more money. They don't have to incentivize vehicles. And so you're going to see lower selection, poorer selection of vehicles on dealer lots. I hope they improve the ordering process where they can turn orders around faster. There are going to be some companies, like for Nissan, for example, we can get a lot more product than we can from from Ford. And people say, well, Lenny, how come you can get more from Nissan? I said, well, maybe they use a different supplier of chips. I don't know. They won't tell us. You know, all I know is that I'm getting a lot more Nissans in than I'm getting Fords, and that's true for everybody else as well. Well, if you have an issue that I can help you with, don't hesitate to call 423-552-2020, and we will see you tomorrow.